are now joining Children of the Watch.
That's right. It's the number one podcast in the galaxy for all things Star Wars television. I'm your host, Alex Maxwell, and joining me, as always, is ASMR Mac.
Mac Lacey. Welcome to the Chapter 4 voicemail episode. Big episode this week, so we got tons to talk about. Been really looking forward to hearing, you know, everything that you
Can't
guys have
wait.
To say about that. Sorry that this one is a little bit later getting out. We just sometimes need a little flexibility on the weekends, even when the show's coming out and everything like that. So, but we're here and we're doing it now. And I'm very excited to hear what y'all all have to say.
Oh, there's some fantastic voicemails. I mean, the theories in this one are going to be insane. So if you like speculation, some might even say irresponsible speculation, just wild theories, then this episode is for you because we've got them. And this is part of the fun of watching Star Wars television, in my opinion, is because like once a Star Wars movie comes out, I mean, you got like 2 years to speculate and then you kind of burn out on it after a week
right.
of like, I don't know where it's going. What I love about TV is like every week you've got something of like, what could happen next? What could happen at the end? And this is what part of the fun is for me. And it's like always important to remember too, anytime we're speculating or coming up with fun, wild theories, you got to kind of do it with open hands a little bit of like, I don't expect this to happen. Like it shouldn't like, they have to do this, but it's just part of the fun, you know, like come at it with just fun and a realization of like, they've already made the show. It's just fun to speculate where they could go with it.
Yeah, it's just fun to kind of like basically the show week to week is giving you this new set of action figures and we just like to play with them in between, you know, make our own little stories. It's just that's all it is.
It's just bonus if it ends up being like, oh, that's exactly what we thought.
Yeah.
So can't wait because these episodes are some of my favorite. And then, of course, you can support us by going to the Patreon, patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch. For $2 a month, you can get access to the bonus voicemail hotline episodes, which we'll be doing right after this. So we'll be doing even more voicemails. And then you've got other bonus content, plus the Discord, which is a lot of fun to interact and engage with people. Right when the show premieres and be able to talk about it with a really great community. So that is something. But if you can't support us on Patreon, no big deal. Like that is okay. You can also support us by going to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and giving us a 5-star review there because that goes a long way in helping get the podcast out to everybody else. So that's another awesome way you could support us.
Yeah, for sure. And if you're listening on the podcast, we do YouTube as well. So whichever way you prefer to consume our content, you know, both are available. So.
You said doo-doo. All right, let's do a voicemail.
Yeah, we should probably play a voicemail.
G'day, Children of the Watch. Tom here from Dubbo in Australia. It's a small country town out there. Just a shout out. We love your show. The show has brought our family closer together. We listen on long car drives, my wife and I, with our 8, 6, and 4-year-old boys. So shout out to my wife, Vicky, and Gordon, Fox, and Joseph. Just one thought as to where the show may head or where a threat may come from. I think that the landscape of Mos Espa is going to be coming under a threat. We know that it's a big gorge. It's almost shaped like a bowl, and water has been a massive theme in the show. The last episode even was called The Gathering Storm. It seems like every episode water's been a theme, and as we've gone through the seas of Tatooine, I think that city may become under threat. Maybe even itself may start filling up with water, just given the fact they're showing us that landscape continually anytime we're in there. That's just a thought, but love the show, and I look forward to journeying through Boba together with you guys. Thanks.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That is how you do it. I love that theory. That is great theory. Thank you for your call.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for sharing that. You know, the whole family listens to the show together. That's really cool to hear.
Shout out to your family.
like the community we've kind of been able to build. Like, we got folks from all over the world. It's just so cool. Yeah. Like, Star Wars is just such a cool thing to bring people together, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, whether it's a family or, you know, people from across, you know, different continents. So yeah, it's cool.
So cool.
Yeah, so Mos Espa filling up with water, like almost like a, like, I mean, it is shaped like a bowl.
Yeah. But like, when he said this, like, I was like, oh my gosh, that could happen. Because like, they have made such an emphasis on water being a part of Tatooine's past.
Yeah.
And how, like, the Tuskens were there when it was a water planet. Like, they were originally part of the planet before it became a huge desert. And like, we've speculated before that the reason that they're wearing the gear that they are is because they had to adapt to survive the new harsh conditions. And probably they don't need that stuff if there's water, right?
Yeah, that's at least how it works in my mind. Like, we don't know for sure, you know, but just with this show, the extra attention we've gotten on that kind of stuff, it, to me, it seems like they're probably like a different kind of species, and they're having to, you know, wear all that to survive the desert. Yeah, I guess, like, my biggest question with this is, where would the water come from?
Yeah, so, I mean, we know that there's water because there's water farmers, basically, on
moisture
Tatooine.
Farmers, yeah.
So, like, they're sucking the moisture out from under the ground.
Gotcha.
Deep under the ground. I mean, it's possible that this could come from deep under the ground. You know, like, there's something that happens that triggers the water to reemerge and fill that whole area and kind of make it like a lake. Or, I mean, maybe it's transported over. I mean, we had joked, we had listened to this voicemail before. We had joked, like, what if Boba brings in water from Kamino just to fill in the bowl?
Just like a Star Destroyer filled with water.
It's amazing. But, like, I could see a scenario where it's like, maybe Boba's goal is, like, he's going to clear out that area and leave the bad guys in and then fill it with water. It's like almost like a renewal of Tatooine by getting rid of the corruption and literally drowning it. Like,
washing the slate clean, kind of.
Yeah. And then, like, I mean, obviously he would get all the people out that needed to be out, but, I could, because that seems to be the, like, the hotbed of criminal activity is right there in that little bowl area of Mos Espa, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, he could it out.
Right, right. It would also be cool, like, if the Tuskens were some, like, if they were aquatic in nature.
Yeah.
It'd be awesome because there would be already a city underwater and they could just move in, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're all, the houses and buildings
right
and everything are already there. It'd be underwater.
Mm, I kind of like that.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I do think if that were to happen, it would be part of, like, okay, this is a master plan where we can get everybody and kind of, you know, take everybody out we need to at one time. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe towards the end of the show, we might revisit. Who knows?
I mean, I do think something is going to happen with water at some point, like, right? Like, they've mentioned it way too much for it just to kind of be, oh yeah, we're just building the history of Tatooine. It feels important at this point. Like, the writers want us to see, okay, water was a thing on Tatooine.
Yeah. Like, so particularly, like, with the water vendor, you know, Boba's interaction there. That was pointed. You know, I feel like that's going to come around later. Like that interaction was probably foreshadowing of something to come, you know. Water's an issue. So
I don't know. Fantastic voicemail. Thank you again. And he actually sent that in through our email. So, like, if you're an international listener and you've got some issues calling in, because I know that can be an issue sometimes, you can send us a voicemail to our email, MandalorianWatch@gmail.com. Just keep it under 3 minutes is all that we ask, and we'll try to get you on here. And before we jump into our next voicemail, I want to give a shout out to our patrons, our Mandalore patrons. Thank you, Sean M., Brian S., Myron C., Dave, Tyler B., Amy C., Emily, Annie, Andrew Verdon, Jansen B., James Parker Price, Todd, Sam Smallwood, Adam S., Larry S., Matt from Michigan, Rick Villanueva, Jesse, James B., Sean D., Yosef R., George H., Haley Hobbs, Rob, Liam L., Alex from Florida, Bread Maker, Kyle, and Noah F. It's a good thing. Thank you, because I have to keep making these new slides for this. And I want to say thank you for that, because like, that is not annoying to do. Thank you for your support, Mandalore patrons.
Yeah, for sure. Y'all hold us down. Thanks for everything you do to support us.
Yeah. All right. Let's do the next voicemail.
Hey guys, this is Jake from California. I was just watching your breakdown of episode 3 of the Book of Boba Fett, and I had a theory. So what if the Shadow Collective actually is still functioning with Kira as the leader? We saw the Hutt threatening or telling Boba that the Pikes were taking over Tatooine, which might have been a move to just try and get him out of there, because they have kind of lost their strength since Jabba has been killed. So I don't know. It seems like they might be still working together. So what if the Shadow Collective is still working together? And what if they've actually made a deal with Thrawn, since we know he's seems like he's going to be the next villain in the show? It'd be interesting to see Thrawn working with, you know, the crime families, try and gain some more power since the Empire has been destroyed, and, you know, kind of get his resources and regain control. And it'd also just be very cool to see Thrawn and Kira and the crime families, you know, fighting against the Mandalorians and Boba Fett and Ahsoka and those, and the much anticipated crossover event. So I think if we saw something like that, that'd be very cool. And it'd be a good way to kind of tie this show into the rest of the TV shows that we've been getting. It feels a little separated right now. And I think it'd be a good way to, you know, give it some importance. So, you know, you think? I think it'd be very fun to watch. Bye.
Thank you, Jake from California. That was a fantastic voicemail. Okay, so he started off by saying, is it possible that Kira is not just in charge of Crimson Dawn at this point, but she's actually in charge of the Shadow Collective, which were in the Clone Wars, if you're not familiar. And I know we've said this a lot, but again, we might have new listeners. So the Shadow Collective, Black Sun, Crimson Dawn, Death Watch, a group of Mandalorians, and the Hutts. Is there anybody else?
Black Sun, Pikes.
The Pikes. Yeah. So they were all together as like this criminal super organization that Darth Maul actually united. And then, of course, when we saw again, Maul was in charge of Crimson Dawn, and Kira was now his subordinate. Now we're kind of assuming Kira's in charge of at least the whole operation of Crimson Dawn. Could she be in charge of a new Shadow Collective?
Yeah. My understanding of Crimson Dawn is I have always thought of it as just what the Shadow Collective evolved into, kind of, just because Maul was at the head of it, you know? But I don't think that's the case anymore. I think Crimson Dawn was an existing family. And I think, like, I mean, we've got Dryden Vos in some Clone Wars stuff.
Right.
Already, you know, crimsoning the Dawn.
He's donning the crimson.
Donning that crimson, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it would be cool if basically Kira kind of did the same thing. Like, she would have known that that was possible. Maul would have talked about that with her, right?
Yeah. He loves to brag.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, Maul loves to brag.
Right. So, I mean, she would have, like, understood how that works. I could see her, like, trying to do it again, you know? Being this, like, kind of criminal mastermind trying to... The thing about Kira's character is, from Solo, the whole point was, like, she was a character who missed her one chance to get out.
Yep.
And has... and really never will get another one. You know, she's kind of a lifer in the life. Like, she missed her shot, and you can tell, like, she's had to do things to get where she is that, like, will not allow her to lead any other life.
Right.
You know? So I love that idea of, like, her essentially doing what Boba's doing. Like, just being, yeah, I'm in this life. Let's see how high I can climb. And then trying to reassemble Shadow Collective.
Okay. There's another point to that, but I want to move on to the Thrawn thing, because it is an interesting idea of... That is totally a thing that I could see Thrawn doing in terms of the chess pieces of, like, I'm going to have an alliance at least with these crime families. Doesn't necessarily mean he'll be loyal to them, but I could definitely see him using them. Now, I would say this is not super likely. Like, I don't think we'll see Thrawn in this show.
I agree.
I think the connection that we're getting is mainly going to be Din showing up, and that's the major connection that we'll have to kind of the New Republic era, I guess is what we can call that, with the Mandalorian and Ahsoka and stuff. But it would be very cool. It would be very cool. Now, here's kind of where I was thinking the other thing. If Shadow Collective is a thing, and we have pretty much everyone there but Crimson Dawn and Black Sun at this point, as far as we know. Is it possible? This is kind of hard to think about, but is it possible that some Mandalorians would be on the other side with the bad guys?
Yeah. Ooh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's precedent, obviously, with the Mandalorians.
Sure.
Like, a whole faction of Mandalorians became aligned with that exact, you know, crime syndicate. That's an interesting, a really interesting thought. Like, what if, like, especially, like, maybe our friends from the covert, you know? Because they would have been, like, I could see Paz Vizsla not having anything else to do and then ending up on the other side of the conflict, you know?
So there's a good chance, okay, I was thinking about this too, if Thrawn is in charge, I was thinking, would there be any Mandalorians who would fight on that side? Yes, there is, because as we know in Star Wars Rebels... They were basically the Mandalorians, those who are aligned with Maul, switched their allegiance to the Empire when the Empire took over, and they were the last ones who were actually really in charge for the Empire. You know what I'm saying? Like, so that's possible.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. I mean,
yeah.
We'll see in the next 3 weeks what happens.
We're running out of time, so.
Yeah, so great phone call. Thank you, Jake, from California. Let's do the next one.
Sounds good.
Hey, Mac and Alex. It's your boy, Rick. I'm going to be a little bit louder this time than last time because I can. But listen, episode, whatever the number was that we just watched, I have a theory that's been kind of running around in my head a little bit. Right. So remember the episode where they had the Nightwing assassin and they threw him down in the Rancor pit and there was what we thought was a little mouse down there? That's a rat. Okay. Now this last episode, we go in the kitchen and they think there's a rat and they bring in a rat catcher. I think, maybe you already kind of feel where I'm going here. I think that's Jon Favreau's way as a writer to tell us that there's a rat in Jabba's palace, in Boba's palace, I'm sorry. And that rat might be Fennec Shan. But she's snitching on him somewhere. She's talking to somebody else. We know she's got connections to other people in the underworld. She's been mysteriously absent in some key scenes, at least briefly. And while this last episode kind of showed that she may be loyal to him, it still felt to me like, I don't know, but maybe something's still going on. Kind of like The Departed at the end when the rat goes, spoilers for The Departed that came out 100 years ago. But there's a rat that goes along the balcony rail at the end of the movie there to let you know who the rat was. So I'll let you mull over that. Toro sucks, Meeber gets on rules. Peace out!
Listen, when you get Rick Villanueva on the same page, I think there's something up.
Might be something to it. Yeah, it's good that we're kind of sticking with the Finnick topic, the Finnick question, as I've been referring to it in my own head. Yeah, I like the rat catcher droid type thing. While I'm thrilled with just the concept of a droid whose only purpose is to catch rats, and I'm just glad that we have that in Star Wars now, I do like it also as like a potential bit of foreshadowing, something like that.
I think that makes sense because they have, I mean, they did focus on the rat in that episode when the Nightwind assassin was in the Rancor pit. And then again, we get it brought up kind of like the water thing, right? It's like, now this is a little more subtle than the water thing has been. The water thing has been right in your face every time. The rat thing is a little more subtle, but like, I do think there's just, I don't think you tell a story like this about crime lords and like without any sort of betrayal that happens.
Right.
Right.
It's, like, it's just like a baked in trope to right. these kind of stories. Right. I mean, we like early on I was comparing, I was thinking like it was probably going to be like Sopranos in space, you know, like you're dealing with rats and that kind of thing in a show like that. Yeah, I agree with you. Like, I don't think you tell this story without having some kind of twist in that regard, you know? And I'd love it if all of us were surprised about what the twist is. Like, maybe maybe there's a twist that's coming that's not Finnick, you know? And that'd be great, like a great subversion of expectations. But, I do think something's coming, and I do think it could be a Finnick turn, you know?
I mean, you were right about what the speculation would be. I thought there would be, like, of course, there's going to be more talk about Din as we go further in this episode and the Mandalorian coming in and like who he could bring and stuff like that. But I think there are like were major red flags in this episode that pointed out like Finnick might have different motivations than Boba Fett. Like the way that she just kind of talked about everything, even though she appears to be very loyal right now, and she definitely knows what she's doing. She's an awesome character. We all agree about that. It's just, why is she still kind of sticking around Boba is the question. So if, you know, if I were to bring up the cork board again that I created,
it's incredible.
The red lines point to two people, Finnick Shand and Kira from Solo.
Yep.
These two people have connections to all the crime in the underworld. Maul did too, but he's dead. So he is officially dead by this point, by the way.
On screen for good.
For good.
Yep. Yeah, I think it really does just still come down to what was Finnick doing in Mos Espa before the events of The Mandalorian. Like, I really do think it comes down to that. And I don't know. Maybe we'll get that answer in this show, but we may not.
No, we might not. Yeah, and it might just be, like, she is just loyal to him because he saved her, and that's it. Yeah. You know, like, in that, I mean, that's totally possible. It's like, she's just gonna do whatever he says because, like, he saved her life.
Right. Or you know, she's buying into that idea of like we're a partnership, like we can build something. You
right.
know, she could just be bought into that too. I don't know. I personally feel like chapter 4 did a great job of almost like lulling us into a sense of comfort around Finnick. Like it gave us some answers, but they seemed a little too easy, you know?
And if there's anybody who's an expert on knowing when they're being lulled, it's Mac Lacy. Like, he knows. He's always on edge. He's always right. Like, don't lull him. He will know that you're doing it.
Yeah, this is a lull-free zone.
He is against lulls. He will wake up instantly. Like you know that feeling you have when you're falling asleep? And it's like, you feel like you're falling, and you're like, oh, gosh. Oh, and you wake up. You do that all the time.
Yeah, if I even catch wind of some lulling going on, I'm awake. I'm bolting. So
no lulls here. No lulls here. All right, let's do the next voicemail.
Hey guys, my name's Reese, calling from Toronto, Canada. first time caller, but been watching, listening for ages, and just want to say thank you so much for doing your podcast. It's really great. Your take on it is just, so great. You guys balance each other out really well. So a couple points to say about Book of Boba Fett chapter number 4. The first one's around sort of the modding scene. I did think it was a little bit long, but I thought it was really good to sort of tie in a little bit more of the culture that appears to be on Tatooine about the sort of modding people. So kind of helps with the chapter 3 beforehand. And just on the chapter 3 part, I think that people are forgetting that like pod racing exists on Tatooine, and it's like a big deal. So having these kids who almost have their own pod races in the Vespa type sort of vehicles makes a lot of sense. But I do get the complaint about sort of the aesthetic of them being kind of Power Rangy. If you think of everything on Tatooine, it's the sand planet, it's rusty, it's sort of dirty, and they're complaining about having a lack of water. So how can they have these bright, shiny vehicles that just don't quite fit? So maybe it's the aesthetic just changed. Anyway, my main question for you on Chapter 4 is a quote that Boba says when they're sitting around the fire pit before they go into Jabba Hutt's palace. He says, "Then I'm going to kill that bloated pig that double-crossed me." I just, if he's on about Bib Fortuna, what was the double cross? I don't quite get that. Anyway, hopefully you guys can help with that. And then the last thing, I'm going to make a bold prediction. I think in the last or second last episode, we're going to have a very trapped off moment where Bobber and the gang are sort of like down on their luck. It doesn't look good. And then we're going to have a very late last minute Han Solo style entry. Or if you'll forgive the franchise crossover, but like Gandalf on the hill at the Battle of Helm's Deep. And it's going to be our amazing Tusken Queen with an army of Tusken clans who have reunited to help Bobber. I'm really hoping that's going to happen. It's a bit of a brave call, but I think it will happen. I'll save the day. Anyway, thank you so much. Enjoy the podcast, everyone. And keep the watch.
Ooh, that is prediction. Nice.
Reese, thank you so much for the call. I need that image now. Like I need that to happen.
Yeah, I saw her like
permanently burned into my brain now.
An Opie. And rising up with the gaffy stick. Man, that would be amazing. And they rush down into the gorge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would be
into
so cool.
Into the now flooded bowl of Mos Espa.
Yes. Oh, man. I thought he was going to go the direction of Din, like the Mandalorian. But then idea of the Tusken Queen with united tribes of Tuskens. Yeah. That is something that I really hope we see.
Yeah, I mean, so the Tusken Queen, like, we haven't really, you know, she could have got it out, or she could have gotten out of the village at the time, you know, we haven't, like, seen her body. I think that would be, so it would be very cathartic, like, for what happened kind of mid-season. You know, it'd be great to see that, the triumphant return of the Queen, like, leading, you know, her people to do justice, you know.
I feel like that would be like a finale thing, though, if it does happen.
Yeah, 100%.
I just love that image in my mind of the Tuskens coming to save Tatooine, even though, like, out of all the people, they probably, like, have the most excuse not to. You know what I mean?
Right.
And like, but the fact that they do, that would be so cool. Like, you know, like, yeah, we're better. And like, we're going to do this because we love Tatooine. This is our home.
Yeah.
That would be really cool. I would like that a lot. And then, Reese, your question was a really great question that I've seen being asked a lot. Like, okay, so what did Bib Fortuna, that's who we're assuming he's talking about, the bloated pig who double-crossed him, what did he actually do? What did he do to double-cross Boba?
Yeah, and that's something that I did take note of when I was watching. There was just so much to discuss. We just didn't really get to it, you know, in our breakdown. It's a great question, and it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about, like, who... Is anybody keeping tabs on Boba? Is anyone aware of his situation, you know, that could be kind of pulling some strings to arrange this? Like you were saying, like, starting a war kind of by, you know, pulling strings behind the scenes.
Right.
And, like, I don't see Bib as someone who could do anything like that. He just seems like a kind of a bumbling, you know, idiot that just fell into his role, right?
Right.
But like, yeah, what was the infraction that Boba's talking about specifically? Was it just like leaving him for dead, you know, like not trying to get him out of the Sarlacc or anything?
Now, here's a potential answer, and we kind of discussed this a little bit on the Discord, kind of worked this out, but you have to work it out to make it work.
Yeah.
Which is something that you had said on our breakdown. It's like, I feel like media needs to stand on its own. Yeah. So like, I like that it could potentially be referencing this point, but like, it also probably should have been explained or later explained in the episode if that, you know, is a deal. But basically, in the War of the Bounty Hunter comics, which we've been talking about a lot, and Kira actually makes her reappearance kind of in this as well. And this all takes place after Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
We learn that Bib Fortuna was the one who put the bounty out on Boba Fett.
Right.
So, like, it could be that in the sense of when Boba was trying to get Han Solo back to Jabba's palace, he had a hit put out on him, Boba Fett,
right.
And we end up learning that it was Bib Fortuna who had done that.
Yeah.
And so we could be led to assume that the reason he's so, like, he's not even going to let Bib stay alive is he's getting vengeance. And like you said, Mac, like that, this past episode, Chapter 4, he's really settling all the scores that he has to settle in right. that episode.
Yeah, even coming down to the Sarlacc.
Like, right.
You know? This, as far as I know, like, non-sentient entity, right?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, for me, the War of the Bounty Hunters thing, that was just so much happened after that happened, you know?
Right.
That was like, during Empire Strikes Back, basically.
Right.
So, like, you have all of that time in between, like,
to do
when
something.
Boba's... we're led to assume he's just, like, hanging around the palace, right?
Yeah.
So, like, what happened during that time, you know?
Right. Yeah. Maybe Bib and Boba have a long history of just not liking each other.
Right.
And, you know, that's just... that's not something that we'll get an answer to. Now, that will... I will say, like, I don't feel like we need an answer to everything.
Right, of course.
Part of the cool part of Star Wars is sometimes just letting your mind fill in the gaps.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I'm okay if we don't get an answer to what that actually is.
Yeah.
Too. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's part of the fun of Star Wars sometimes, is just in your mind doing these types of episodes, and we actually never get the answer, and it can kind of be whatever we want it to be in our mind.
Yeah. For sure.
So, yeah. Great phone call. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Cool. All right, let's do the next one.
Hey, guys. Love the podcast. I've been with you guys since Mandalorian Watch. Just wanted to get your opinion on a theory I've had for a while about the Armorer, since you guys brought her up again. I'm wondering why the Armory has the logo of the Mythosaur, and why the necklace had the logo. I thought it was Boba Fett's signet, so I was wondering if maybe the signet is for the whole Fett family, and I'm wondering if the Armorer is actually Omega. Let me know what you think. I also am wondering if it is Omega, and if she's Mandalorian, that she could be with Crimson Dawn and be on the other side of Boba Fett. Who knows? Goodbye.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I'm doing some legwork in my brain real fast.
Okay, so I'll let you do the legwork, and I'll explain the Mythosaur symbol. The Mythosaur symbol is actually the symbol for Mandalorians in general. Like, that's a symbol that they can all kind of rally behind. And that's something that was confirmed, I would say, in Chapter 1 of The Mandalorian, where Quill says, "Your ancestors rode the great Mythosaur." So it's something that Mandalorians are kind of known for in general. So, like, any Mandalorian can kind of take that as, like, a banner for all Mandalorians is the Mythosaur skull. Now, I'd say Boba's more specific symbol, which is like that wheat symbol on the front of his armor, that's the Journeyman Protector symbol. And that's actually from the old EU, the old canon explained it. That was Jaster Meryl's symbol. And he was this guy called a Journeyman Protector in the Mandalorian sector who would go around and basically a lawman, like a lawman Mandalorian, and protecting the frontiers of Mandalore space. And Jaster Meryl was like the mentor to Jango Fett. And then, so it's kind of like Boba's grandfather. So that would be more the Fett symbol in my mind. And the Mythosaur is more for all of Mandalorians.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a fantastic explanation of that. I would agree. Like the Journeyman Protector symbol speaks more to that lineage and everything, yeah. Which I think is, you know, like the reason getting a signet was a huge deal for Din is he's basically starting a house, right?
Right.
Like it's a house of one so far, but like because he was a foundling, he doesn't have this ancestry to right. go off of. Like, so like a Sabine Wren has, you know, a lineage, like her armor has been worn by generations of Wrens, you know?
Right.
So like it's a huge deal that Din got a signet because that could be the start of the next great Mandalorian house, you know?
The Jaren house or so, you know, like right. that's, yeah.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm from Clan Jaren or yeah. whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Omega being the armorer. The armorer, I think, is the character at the moment that I want to show up in this show the most. Like, I want Din to bring the armorer into this show just because she's so cool.
Yeah.
And we don't know much about her, you know?
Yeah.
So what do you think of her being Omega?
I don't think that is the case. I just think, so if you're not familiar with who Omega is, she's from the Bad Batch animated series, and we basically learn this is essentially Boba's sister that he did not know about, neither did Jango.
Right.
And I would say her life track is different than Boba's in the sense of, I don't see her like joining any Mandalorian group or really having anything to do with Mandalorians. If anything, I think she's going to probably end up taking pieces of the Bad Batch's armors and like making herself like an all-in-one Bad Batch specialist when she's older. Like in the sense of like she can do it all. Like she is like a great mercenary probably by the time she's older, but I don't see her like joining the Mandalorian cause. To me, and this is just my speculation, to me it makes sense that the armorer was a Mandalorian from the get-go and she is steeped in Mandalorian history. I would say there's a good chance she is the one who started the Children of the Watch and broke away from the rest of Mandalorian society. At what point that happened, I'm not sure, but I'm going to guess it was somewhere either during the Clone Wars or right after the Clone Wars when the Maul taking over Mandalore thing happened, because she kind of realized, this is just in my headcanon, but it kind of makes sense from what we know about her. She kind of realized, to stay Mandalorian, we're losing our way. We've got to go back to the old ways. And so to me, that makes her a little bit older than Din. That makes her a little bit older than Bo-Katan. She's probably, you know, older than what Omega would be.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking like, because I always like to work backwards some, yeah. like when we get things like this and be like, what would have to happen for this to be true?
Yeah. Right?
So for Omega to be the armorer, what would have to happen to get her there? It's a lot of terrible stuff,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, it'd be
like,
a lot.
Like things would have to go very poorly for a very long time, I feel mm-hmm. like, to produce like the armorer from Omega.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. But that's a very interesting thought for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like that's been my favorite thing to think about in the past few days since the episodes ended. Like, obviously we love the Mandalorian because that's how we started. Like we started as the Mandalorian Watch when we did season one and season two of the shows, doing the same sort of breakdowns and stuff. And to me, like, I guess just where I'm at with my Star Wars fandom right now, Din is my favorite Star Wars character. Like he is, like I'm so excited to see him back again. Like I miss him. Like yeah. I want to know what's going on with him next. So I can't wait, you know, to see him again and just kind of get an idea of what is happening in that area of the Star Wars universe and what's he doing and who could he bring. Now, I think it would be amazing if he brought the Armorer, but I also kind of feel like if she is going to show up again, it's not going to be this show.
Yeah.
I think they're safe because there would be a really cool conflict that could happen between the Armorer and Bo-Katan because they're on opposite sides. And, you know, you have Din kind of in the middle of that.
Yeah.
Where he has to choose.
Yeah.
That would be some good stuff.
Yeah, and that's definitely what I want from Mandalorian season 3. Like Grogu I think is going to be out of the picture, right?
For the most part. I think he'll still show up, but like he's not going to be with Din all the time.
Right. Like he's been the central focus of the show thus far. But I think this next conflict is going to be, like you said, we're getting into greater territory. We're talking about Mandalorians as a whole, you know.
Yeah.
Like the fate of an entire like lineage. So fun things are coming. I'm excited.
Do you think Din shows up in this next episode?
I don't know if it'll be the next episode.
If he does, it'll be at the end, or the end. Like, is that what you're thinking? Like almost like a tease of like, oh, now he's arrived.
Yeah, if he shows up in the next one, I think that'll be what happens. Then this is just based off of like how they've introduced Ahsoka. Like they mentioned her a couple episodes before we actually got to her, right? Or at least talking about a Jedi, you know. And so I think with the tease of Din's theme, you know, saying we need to find some muscle at the end of the last episode, it makes me think we're probably a couple episodes out.
Okay.
Okay. That's just my thought. Just based on kind of how it's gone with The Mandalorian.
I will say this, and like, you can seek this out if you want to. I'm not going to say what it is exactly, but there are a lot of rumors out there of what his new ship is.
Yeah.
And I love the idea. I'll just say that. I love the idea. And my mind is like, heck yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. But it also speaks, I think that particular ship would speak a lot to where he is in the stage of, it's a smaller ship. Let's just say that. You know, it's not a bigger ship where people can like Grogu to grow up and live in.
Right. There's not a whole lot of cargo space. It's more of a fighter class vehicle.
Yeah.
So
I'm
intrigued.
That's true. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. If that ends up happening, I'm intrigued to see how I feel about it when I see it. I'm potentially very on board, but I don't think I'm quite as sold as you yet.
Well, there's gonna be a lot of people who won't like it, I think.
Right.
And I'm okay with
just
that.
Just due to the...
Yeah, the nature of it.
The nature of it.
Yeah.
We're talking in such vague terms. So vague. This is so...
But, I mean, again, I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but you can go easily search that if you want to. Yeah. I'm excited. I hope Din is just in the beginning of the episode from the get-go, and this show just becomes The Mandalorian from here on out, and... I'm just kidding, but not really. I don't know. I'm just super excited for Din to show up and if he brings any friends with him.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. So
I can't wait. We're almost there.
Yeah. Well, this was a fantastic voicemail episode. We're going to roll right into the Patreon voicemail episode from this. But we'll go ahead and sign off to all y'all. Thank you so much for your calls this week. Some really good conversation, really good discussions. And we'll be, you know, back on Wednesday with the next chapter breakdown for the book.
Chapter 5.
So Yeah, hit us up on the socials, leave us reviews and ratings on Apple Podcasts, go like and subscribe if you're on YouTube, all that good stuff.
Keepthewatch.com for merch. Yep.
Check out some merch, get a mug, a Vanth refrigeration mug.
Or a fanny pack.
A fanny pack, a baby onesie.
Yep.
Yeah, who knows? So.
Who knows?
Cool, cool. Well, until next time, keep the watch.